Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Sujit DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
And welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 404. I'm sure we'll come up with some cool jokes around that as we go through the episode. If you don't get the joke, don't worry about it. You're not in IT. Everybody else in IT gets it. this is being recorded on December 1st, and today we actually, this is going to be a really interesting show because we've got one of the folks from the Microsoft CBL Mariner Linux distribution team, and they're doing some really neat things internally that they're going to talk to us about. We've got Cynthia's here, Kendall's here, Kale's here, Russell is here, so we got a nice full crowd, as well as our special guest, Jim Perrin. Before we get to Jim, let's talk about our news. Who wants to go first today?
I have one I can share, if that's cool.
Sure.
So I think we announced this yesterday, but Azure Key Vault Secrets Provider extension for Azure Arc is now in public preview. So if you're using, you know, Azure Kubernetes service, and then you want to kind of extend that management plane of Azure to some other Kubernetes clusters that might not be running in Azure, then we have Azure Arc, which I know we've done some shows on before, at least I've touched on. And so essentially we have a series of things that you can kind of push down to those managed clusters. And one of those is going to be the Azure Key Vault Secrets Provider extension. So basically what this allows you to do is if you're running your cluster locally and you have applications that need to access secrets in a secure way using Azure Key Vault, then you can actually get that Key Vault kind of secrets provider to access those secrets in a secure way up through Azure. And so I think this is really great to kind of bring that down to the local Kubernetes cluster that you're running, or maybe a cluster even in another cloud provider. So I thought that was pretty neat that they've made this available, and I think is just further progress in terms of the Azure Arc story and the kind of capabilities that we're bringing to these other clusters from that single pane of glass in Azure. So just wanted to call that out.
Absolutely, that's cool.
I also had one that came into public preview very recently. It's the Azure Load Testing Service. So we hear from a lot of our customers that sometimes or many times we run into issues only when there's a significant amount of load that's hitting the application. So with this managed service, you're able to simulate a lot of those load. And what's really cool about the service is that you're also able to integrate it to become part of your CI/CD pipeline. So you can put these load testing steps as part of your GitHub Action or Azure Pipelines. And that way you're able to catch it earlier. And then the whole concept of shifting left of like ensuring more things are tested and more things are validated before they progress into later stages in your deployment.
I think I saw we've actually got one of the PMs coming on the show in the near future.
We do. I think it's sometime in 2022, very early in 2022.
Look forward to that one, because that's been a gap for some time, I think, in developers' toolkits. Yeah. We used to have it quite a while ago, but it was always a bit of a clunky tool, and to try and automate it in the CI/CD pipeline was always difficult. So I was just looking at some of the features that it's got, and it looks really nice. The graphs are quite good. You can compare results between different runs and so on. So yeah, looking forward to that.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
Also want to call out how happy I am that Russell's here. I know he hasn't been able to join because we're in different time zones and things like that, but happy to have you, Russell.
thank you very much. Very kind.
Absolutely. The one that caught my attention, just because we had, we actually talked about SAP, about 10 episodes ago, we had Ravi Kashyap on. We just announced integration between SAP HANA telemetry and Azure Monitor. Right. So all the things that are flowing through the, they're really important on the HANA side, HANA telemetry, database telemetry, SAP telemetry, all that's flowing to Azure Monitor. So you have this nice single pane of glass around it. That's a nice manageability benefit at that point to customers that like Azure Monitor. Anybody else? Okay, Cool. Well, let's at this point, let's get over to our special guest. Jim, introduce yourself, if you would, and then let us know what the heck a guy like you is doing at Microsoft.
Causing as many problems as I can, I think. For people who don't know me, my name is Jim Perrin. I've been in open source and Linux distributions now for, God, longer than I care to admit on the air, I think, probably close to 16 years or so. I started with the CentOS project around 2004. Before then, it was mostly just playing as a hobby, things to do in college, things like that. And I joined Microsoft in, May of 2020. So kind of, I guess, at the beginning of the pandemic now.
I was saying, have you been in an office yet?
I have not.
Okay.
The one time I have been in a Microsoft office, I wasn't an employee. I was a guest of another company collaborating with Microsoft.
That's awesome.
I have yet to set foot in an office as an employee.
Cool. No, that's great. And it's, it's that Linux background. That's why we're keeping it. All the rest of us are really back in our offices. We're just not telling you. just a little bit of callback for the audience, right? Those of you that have been listening to the show for a long time, know that many, 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 many moons ago, Azure was called Windows Azure. It has evolved. We did a big show and we changed it to Microsoft Azure. And maybe a year and a half ago, we announced publicly that more than 50% of our customer VMs, in Azure are running Linux. And these days we're running a ton of stuff underneath the covers is on Linux. And this is where you guys come in, Jen. This is where Mariner comes into play, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. This is exactly what we're trying to do with the official name is CBL Mariner. Most people shorthand it and say Mariner. I'll probably do that for the purposes of the podcast. Fine. Our design or our plan for Mariner is effectively just to kind of standardize what we're doing internally and to get everybody kind of on the same page for testing, for feature validation, just a little bit of internal housekeeping and consistency. And that's basically where Mariner shines. That's the feature that we can bring inside Microsoft where we're using it. There's a lot of cross-team collaboration for things like AKS, Azure Kubernetes Service, a lot of the Linux work that's going on there. For internal teams who want to use Linux and are migrating over to AKS to host their services, we're trying to provide a good solid baseline with all of the kind of Azure bits built into it so teams don't have to kind of assemble their own.
So yeah, Jim, kind of going off of that, I have a question for you, but I'll leave that one second just because I think I don't want to digress from where we are. So to give people context who have literally never heard of Mariner before, it's an operating system. It's a, is it a like, hey, we forked like an open source Linux kernel? Like what exactly is it from a technical perspective? Just because I want to make sure that people who are like, what is Mariner? Like, yes, people are using it on AKS. Is it like a container? Like I want to make sure that we get to the baseline of what it actually is.
No, that's a great question. I would say Mariner has its roots in kind of an older VMware thing, VMware's Photon, but it's not necessarily derived from that. This is basically a Linux operating system with a couple of major target areas for use cases that we wanted to land internally. We kind of cherry-picked some packages from Fedora, some packages from SUSE. Some of the tooling came from Photon, but we've basically tweaked it and kind of modified it to make our own distribution. So I wouldn't necessarily say that we're following, any particular upstream. It's not Debian-based. It's not anything like that. But our use cases right now, we're basically looking at VMs for container host environments. Like I mentioned for AKS, we're doing an environment there. We're looking at containerized platforms that are consistent. So teams that are running VMs that want to transition to container workloads have a consistent experience across that environment. And then we've got some of just kind of the traditional VM workloads for a few teams that are just like, look, I want to run this. Here's how we're doing it. We were an ingredient in a couple of things that got announced, I want to say last year, but time's been a little hazy for the last year and a half. I don't know if it's going that way with anybody else or not. Azure Percept, when that launched, that was basically running Mariner under the covers. And then the Windows subsystem for Linux, the graphical component for WSL, is also Mariner under the covers. So we're trying to keep that consistent across everything. So that it's basically, if you use Linux inside Microsoft, it's the consistent feel, it's the consistent tool set. You know what you're getting.
So Jim, why use Mariner, right? So there's a bunch of other Linux distros, Ubuntu and other ones that people are super familiar with. So why should we use this? Why should I care?
Internally, there's a couple of good reasons for what we're looking to do. But for the most part, I'll say that, you know, the secure supply chain thing has kind of risen up the last few months. That's kind of a big factor for what we're looking at doing. But also, some of the time to market things for landing new features, getting new stuff in place, it's easier if one team is managing that versus trying to coordinate across multiple distributions and multiple teams. Because right now, not all of the teams are using the same distribution or even the same version of the distribution. So if we can get everybody on a consistent platform, those features roll out at the same time. And we don't have to worry, you know, this team over here is using Ubuntu 16.04 and that kernel doesn't support this feature. And this other team, you know, the minute 20.04 came out, they rolled to that. And they've got this thing, but it's a standard platform. So it may slow some teams down. It forces some teams to speed up, but it gets everybody on a consistent basis.
Yeah, and a non-technical follow-up here. I'm curious if it's named after the Seattle baseball team or where the name came from.
I would love to be able to answer that. I honestly can't. The name was chosen before I got here.
Nice.
I have no insight into the name other than the fact that it seems like the Pacific Northwest theme factored into several of the decisions. There were a couple other like Seattle-ish focused things, and I can't imagine why Microsoft would choose, you know, Seattle-themed names.
I think old set SQL 2005 was Kilimanjaro internally because we ran through a bunch of mountains and somebody who was Rainier? I can't remember which. Some version of SQL might have been Rainier as well, which is the mountain right outside. So yeah, no, we go through those trends. I'm with you, Kale. I suspect it is, even if nobody wants to admit it.
It's the hardest problem in tech. Naming things is challenging.
Yeah. Is one of the things that I've run into with some of the, because there's a number of different services that run on top of Linux and like App Gateway's there as well. You know, some of the ones you mentioned. And the Linux world is really good about sharing, but the downside to sharing is that sometimes you're dependent on somebody else for shipping something so that you can consume it. Is part of the goal of what you guys are trying to bring is say, hey, we found this bug with this, you know, kernel component. We need it out today. Now we have control of that. Is that sort of the goal, part of the goal that you guys are trying to do, or am I missing something there?
It's not really a control thing. We're not necessarily looking at, you know, we want to dictate blah, 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 or we're trying to put this thing in and we don't want to collaborate with the upstream. It is open source.
I think I was
software.
Thinking more like timing control. Like I can get it faster if
To some extent, yes. The rest of it is basically finding out what different teams have for their requirements and making sure that we can ensure that we're shipping that. If some team has a dependency on a specific version of Python or something like that, we can't necessarily go to Canonical and say, hey, don't ship anything newer than this. We're dependent on this specific version right here, which is going to be supported for a while. I mean, we can go ask, but they have more customers than just us. So that doesn't necessarily work all that well. And in this case, we can just say this is the version the majority of our teams need, or these are the two or three versions that are required. We're going to ship these, and the internal teams know our life cycle. So what's coming next? You know, we flag it for them a couple of months ahead of time. Hey, we're going to rev to this new version. Let's test it, make sure everything works. And to some extent, we know the Azure ecosystem a little better than some of the other open source things. They may not necessarily be focused on Azure as a cloud yet. I would like to welcome them into that, but we can test for the idiosyncrasies of Azure that we know. We can validate that because it is our bread and butter. We have to work well on Azure.
Yeah, okay. So I think I would maybe restate then, maybe as I listen to you, it's control in the sense of people building on top of it feel like they have more control of what's going on underneath them, not necessarily in a negative way of like, you know, hiding things or whatever. It just makes a more manageable, more sustainable environment, which ultimately leads to a better experience for our customers, right? Because teams don't get surprised by things.
Exactly. And from the beginning, we've had our code basically out in a GitHub repository. We do all our work basically via GitHub in the public space. So we're trying, even though we don't necessarily have outside contributors from community type work yet, and I would welcome people to, you know, contribute from code from the outside for those upstream projects. We are trying to be good open source citizens. We are absolutely putting stuff out there. That was one of the things that I was really happy to hear from the management chain when I came in, is we're not doing this the way people expect Microsoft to build a distribution. We're going to be open about this. We're going to be transparent about this. And it was one of the things that kind of sold me on coming to Microsoft to help out with it.
Yeah, so I have a couple questions, and you actually segued really good into the one I wanted to ask earlier, which is, why the heck does a Linux guy decide to jump on the Microsoft train? Like, from my perspective, I've worked in open source for like the past 3 years I've been at Microsoft. So like, it's very like, I feel very confident in understanding the culture and kind of where we're headed from an open source perspective. But yeah, I'm kind of curious your journey here and what drew you in, and maybe some of the upsides to being on the Linux side of the house here, and maybe some of the drawbacks or the challenges as we introduce this platform more readily. And then the second question is how, and this one might be like a long shot because maybe I'm totally in the ballpark, or maybe I'm like not even close to the field. Azure Sphere, I kind of remember us like having kind of a slimmed down type of OS edge device. Like, where does that fit in? Are they related? Are they not related? So I'll let you talk a little bit about your journey, and then if you can just touch on the Sphere one, that would be
awesome. Yeah, I'll
make the baseball reference, by the way. I realize I made the wow. I'm on it today. Thanks. Yeah.
So I'll reverse that, and I'll hit the Sphere piece first. Sphere is unrelated to Mariner right now. Their team through a reorg came in. They're now kind of like a sister team to us. They're nearby us in the organization, but they're unrelated. They have a specific piece of hardware and a specific build type of thing that they are targeting. So Azure Sphere is kind of a full stack. You've got the device, you've got their little Linux thing on top of it, and the service that drives it. That is very specific and very custom tailored. That's not what we're aiming for with Mariner. On the Mariner side, we're pushing for effectively a general purpose distribution. So people who are familiar with, you know, Ubuntu or CentOS or RHEL have an understanding. It's not the bespoke device build or anything weird like that. As far as coming into Microsoft, yeah, 15 years ago, I would have never seen myself working for Microsoft. That was the, you know, the bad old days of Linux is cancer and blah, blah, blah. And we're still living with some of that reputation now. It's just some of the old people in the community don't necessarily want to let that vision die. But there's something, I'll say, subversive as a Linux guy joining Microsoft and working toward building an open source Linux distribution for Microsoft by Microsoft. That just feels a little, you know, not malicious, but subversive is kind of the right term. It tweaks in just the right ways. Like, yeah, this is, you want to build this in the open, you want to do this the right way. We're talking, absolutely, I will come be a part of this, because how many Linux guys get to say, yeah, I made Microsoft release a Linux distribution. This is fantastic. And for me personally, that does kind of go to show that, you know, the company is changing. It is adopting open source. I mean, VS Code is a phenomenal open source editor. There are just a large number of people driving it inside. And I was kind of surprised at the number of Linux-friendly engineers that were already here, already working stuff when I got here. I was expecting to kind of come in and, you know, have to fight a few of the Windows folks. And I get here and a couple of folks welcome me in. They're like, yeah, this is great. Here, you need to join this group and this group and this group. And I look around and there's, you know, a couple hundred easy, good, solid engineers who are arguing over, we need to do this the right way. Here's what we need to do. These are the differences between Windows and Linux. We need to stop thinking the old way. We need to shift. Like, okay, I really underestimated what Microsoft was doing with this. And I am happy to see this sort of stuff happening inside.
From a like daily use, like using CBL Mariner, like a lot of the other distros have like package managers and other kind of like things built on top of them to make them easier to use. Is there anything like that with CBL Mariner, or is it like, no, I just have to bring binaries over there and it's kind of very basic?
No, we actually use the RPM format for managing packages. So it's the DNF install, whatever you want for a package side of the house. We have some tooling for distroless containers, you know, making multi-stage builds or stripping things down so that it's just the binaries inside the container that you want. We kind of remove the package manager from that. But that's mostly an implementation thing. The base distribution, it's all RPM. And that was one of the things that kind of helped me make a decision around that. I'm a longtime RPM guy, like Fedora, CentOS, RHEL, it's all RPM focused. But for me, being able to validate package builds in an easy way and say, hey, this is signed by us. I can verify it. I can go to an installed system and I can see from these commands, you know, this package was installed on this day. It was signed with this key. It's kind of that verifiable footprint that I like, and just I know it better than, you know, the Debian or Ubuntu side. I'm sure there's probably a way to do it there too, but, you know, old school RPM fanboy, so it all works out.
So where, I mean, you know, we talked about sort of the subversive nature of what you're doing and you know, how the CBL Mariner work is going to drive really overall Azure reliability and quality. Where, you know, sort of in your mind, and again, there's no commitments, no promises, but like, where are you trying to go as a team now with this? Like, what's your next big rock that you're trying to get your head around to try and tackle at this point? I mean, is it just continuing to expand and sort of getting everybody on this, or like where's your head at in terms of where you want to go that you feel like you haven't made the strides yet?
Excuse me. For me, we kind of hit the early milestone. We had our 1.0 release last year, but that was kind of a minimal package set. That was, you know, call it 1,000 packages for our 1.0 release, just to get up and get the container host built, to get our initial MVP going, that sort of stuff. Since our 1.0 release, we've been adding more packages and better support for teams internally for the things that they need as they come to us and say, hey, you know, we like where you're going with this, but we need this feature or we need this thing. So we've spent the last year basically adding those things in, getting that stuff ready. Now it's basically starting to turn the tables on the other teams in Microsoft and saying, look, you said before that, you know, you support Linux, but really you support this version of this release. We want to get away from that. Let's make this more general and let's make sure that we're, I need you to support Mariner. And as a part of this, let's get away from this single distro thing. Let's support it more broadly. And so once we get, you know, the various agents and extensions to support Mariner and to get that feature set in and make it a bit more robust internally, that's the growth that I'm looking for. And that has kind of that cascade adoption sequence into it for other teams picking it up, other teams using it. And then at that point, it becomes less about the distribution. Like, honestly, and I say this as a distro builder, no one cares about the distribution. They don't necessarily want to run Linux for Linux sake. I mean, some people do, fine. But most people, they've got a task. They're looking to run it for a reason. They need to spin up a containerized workload. They want to do something else. So my job, like where I view this, is to build a distribution that gets out of their way and help them do their task faster and better.
Jim, kind of along the lines of what you were describing, I'm not personally super familiar with Linux, but what is the process of migrating from one distro to the other? And given that it seems like for a lot of our internal teams that they're using it, they're all at very large scale. So how does that work?
It's kind of a speed bump effect. There's a bit of a challenge up front to do kind of a proof of concept transition. And it's basically, you know, let's say one of the internal teams is coming from Ubuntu, just because that's something that we helped the team do fairly recently. There's the transition from, you know, Debian naming conventions or Ubuntu naming conventions into the RPM style naming convention. How you install the package changes a little bit, but the basic fundamentals for, you know, running a Python application or running Go or stuff like that, that doesn't necessarily change too much. So we find that we're helping teams get the dependencies for their service set up. We run a proof of concept there, and the rest of the tooling is just kind of a scale thing. They'll either roll it out, they'll create a, you know, a golden image that they validate or whatever, and then they'll just duplicate that as many times as they need to for the service, or they'll use a tool like, you know, Ansible or something like that to automate it. So the work is in that initial kind of proof of concept and tailoring. And the deployment phase is pretty trivial. The deployment phase is cool. We got this working. We validated this image. Roll it out. Here's the script where we deploy at scale. Or here's the tooling that we're using to deploy at scale.
So you've been talking about, like, this is a great tool for, like, internal use. But if I wanted to kind of go play with this or look at it myself, is that possible, Jim?
Oh, yeah. The GitHub repo for it, I don't know if we can attach links to the podcast
or
whatever.
Yeah, we can put it up.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, we have a GitHub repository that is completely open. Honestly, we didn't announce Mariner except for internal when we had our 1.0 release. And we still ended up being, you know, the top link on Hacker News like a month later because somebody found it and was playing around with it. A couple of folks in the WSL community decided to run those or to follow the GitHub directions and spin their own image. And they were running it in WSL just to kind of kick it around as a hobby thing. So absolutely, if you want to play with it, go look at the GitHub repository. There's directions there. I think we have we've got an ISO now for the people just kind of at home if they want to play around with it for a hobby thing. So that's actually pretty good.
Cool. Yeah, no, I think actually, Jim, that's how you and I got hooked up originally, because I think I saw the news article somewhere and said, whoa, wait a minute, what is this cool thing? And we've been talking for like 6 months, right?
Yeah,
trying to figure out when's the right time to get you guys on, because there's workloads that are doing it. I'm actually involved in rolling out working on a new service that they are on CBL Mariner, and you know, it's been neat to know, oh, I know what that is. I'm actually familiar with it. So
It's definitely neat to see the adoption tick over and to watch people kind of start picking it up internally and start using it as the, you know, kind of the Microsoft way for doing things. It's interesting to see it go from, okay, here's a 1.0 release. We think we're in a good place. Let's test it out. And then, you know, random customers inside the company are like, oh, hey, yeah, we're using this thing. And also we found, I didn't even know you were looking at this. That's kind of neat.
Do you, you know, so the one interesting area that I see this, and it used to be a super niche area, and it's definitely grown, is there are teams that are like the networking team, for example, internally. They ship accelerated networking as a feature. They have to ship it for both Linux and for Windows. In scenarios like that, is your team basically partnering with, and I don't necessarily know if I think today you're not necessarily working with them in that fashion, but for scenarios like that, are you guys partnering with those teams to ship this stuff? Do they hand you a spec and you guys write it? How does that tend to work?
Most of the Linux stuff is handled through LSG's kernel team for networking, getting the drivers accepted upstream. There's a lot of work that happens in there. And we take what is accepted upstream. So for our distribution, for what we're pushing, we're pretty adamant that we do not want to carry like Microsoft specific internal patches. If it's not upstream, then it hasn't been accepted upstream, we're not going to roll it. Now we have some that's our open source policy. There's some tooling that gets used internally that is just internal tooling. And yeah, we kind of bake that in and make life easy. But if it's an open source thing and somebody's like, hey, we've got this really cool Linux networking patch, will you run it? I'm like, is it upstream? No? Cool. We're not taking it until it's upstream. Get it accepted. Once it's accepted, then we can roll it in. We can start tuning it. We can, you know, have whatever Azure specific settings are needed kind of baked in there. But upstream first, that is something that we are adamant about. And I very much applaud that approach.
Yeah, it's a very open source like approach at that point, right? Cool. Yeah, no, this is great. So, you know, any last questions for Jim folks, or Jim, any last thoughts that you want to leave the audience with?
No, I think this was good. This was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Yeah, no, thanks for coming on. I definitely, the next time somebody, I was thinking this while we were talking earlier, the next time I have a team that has an outage and it turns out to be a Linux issue, my first question is going to be, are you using Mariner? If not, I have a guy you need to go talk to. So, okay, great.
If you are, you still have a guy.
This is true. But unfortunately, Jim's a PM, so I can't pay Jim like I can a dev. It's not as fun at that point. Okay, great. Cool. Everybody, thanks for coming. I think we've got maybe one more show before we take a break for the holidays, but we will see everybody next week. Thanks, folks.
Sounds great. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.